Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. I want to jump into the cod fishery bounties, but there are a few things that I kind of want to go over. There's obviously the obligatories. As you know, the show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. You were also listening to the only show that provides the clear solutions necessary in getting the federal government into compliance. The federal government does have powers. We've delegated certain powers to them. But there are principles, one, behind those powers. In other words, they may have the ability to declare war, but there are consequences to those types of things, which is why those people who have the power to declare war are up for re-election every 2 years so that we can actually fix their problems by getting rid of them and putting in new people. We don't need term limits. What we need is a constrained government living within the framework of the Constitution. The day that we started allowing politicians to promise benefits from the public treasury, in other words, the public purse, being able to pay you for welfare and these other things, is the day our government went overboard on corruption. And it is just rampant, spending our future and destroying our republic in the wake of creating this entitlement state. Now, the listen number, we have a listen line. And so if you cannot listen to this entire show via streaming, dial 605-562-4209. Now, one of the things I wanted to comment on as a part of the, you know, the introduction is I find it interesting that it's reported that Hong Kong has erected a Statue of Liberty up in the hills. Now, if you've ever been to Hong Kong, those hills are pretty steep, and those hills are not where a lot of people live. I mean, if you look at Hong Kong, there's a lot of high rises that are all around those hills, and then those hills are kind of left undeveloped or what have you. There's just trees. It's not like a bunch of millionaires have their homes looking over Hong Kong, the city of Hong Kong, and Kowloon, and so forth. So anyway, up in the hills, they've erected a Statue of Liberty. The people in Hong Kong are calling for American help and support. And so I want to kind of get into that real quick, because I believe that the U.S. has responsibilities regarding its entanglements or its necessities in conducting foreign affairs. We should have the principles, and we should be still relying upon the principles that founded this great nation. In other words, we should be engaging in entanglements that should be for good reasons. It is very clear that we established a navy at the founding of this republic to ensure that the flow of commerce amongst the nations of the world was able to flow so that we would actually have the benefits of not losing our commerce and not being held hostage to pirates and so forth. Thomas Jefferson engaged the pirates of Tripoli along the Barbary Coast to ensure that our commerce would flow freely. It is very important to understand the role commerce in essence is also a way that our government made money, right? It's the duties and the impost on foreign commerce coming into America is how we made our money. And so commerce had a huge role in the development of this nation. It still does. But the other thing is that we should also have entanglements of pursuing individual liberty with every nation. I mean, if you understand the consequences, what would happen if all of a sudden all of these other good nations started getting involved with America, and not just getting involved in commerce-wise, but actually petitioning, let's say Hong Kong, let's say Singapore, let's say Estonia, Chile. If you start looking, there's a lot of liberty-loving countries out there and liberty-loving people. And these people and countries start petitioning and saying, we want to become a state of the United States. Well, first off, the one benefit I would think of is that what's the need for the UN? Why does the UN even need to exist? We should be able to scuttle the UN and say, you know what, UN, you're irrelevant. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to create a global government that the demise of liberty. But anyway, so first thing that would happen is that the UN would become irrelevant and insignificant, and we would actually be able to get rid of the UN. The second thing is that the evildoers of the world will all of a sudden be facing a lot more of the United States and a lot less of their rogue nations. Case in point, if you look at Taiwan, and Taiwan says, hey, we want Tibet and all of these other countries that China has entangled itself with, and they say, we want to become states of the United States. Well, then we put them on the path. Folks, this is not something that happens overnight, but we put them on the path. And we put them on these terms of agreement so that, you know, once their currency, once their language, and all these other things come on board with what we're doing with the United States, then they become a state. So we're talking maybe 40 years out. But in the interim, China would all of a sudden have to change its behavior, because now it's dealing with the U.S. territory as these states are in transition to become a U.S. state. Now, would this lead in a direct conflict with aggressive countries like China? Possibly so, and possibly with Russia as well. But I believe that it would be viewed by the rest of the world that these aggressive countries that want to inflict and subjugate the people instead of allowing them individual liberty and individual sovereignty. I mean, people, I don't think America is the only one that doesn't like bullies. I think people, human beings around the world, do not like bullies. They don't like people inflicting their will upon them. And so I honestly believe that when we get involved in entanglements, it should be for good reasons. If people want to have good open commerce with us, then there we go. But we should also be seeking and offering liberty by actually letting people understand that, you know, we do have a process if you want to become a state in the United States. We completely respect your sovereignty, but if you want to become a state in the United States and you want to become a part of our system, then, you know, all you've got to do is petition. You have the people vote, and if the people want to do this, then they will commit. And you know what happens is when people say, yeah, we want to become a part of this, I think you'll find that those people will get engaged, you know, with more robustness, vigor, or whatever you want to say, in learning the English, learning what they need to do so that they can transition and become a part of the United States. Would that not be a better world? Because if all of a sudden it is the United States, all other countries around the world become states in the United States, and the only two countries left is Russia and China, and those people actually would then overturn their government because they would face the revolution that the American Revolution was, and actually take over and kick out the despots in power, as we got rid of King George as well. Anyway, just food for thought. Just food for thought, because as we get engaged in Syria, as we get engaged in these other entanglements, What would be the consequence if instead of just fighting wars, killing people, and creating damage and so forth, what would be the consequence if we were actually instilling? Because going into Iraq, that should have become a state of the United States if we were going to get involved in that war or what have you. It's one thing for liberating people, and if a country says, hey, we want you to liberate us, and we'll have to figure out how to pay you to do that. Okay, that's one thing. But it's another thing to say, you know what, we don't want to get involved unless you are committed to individual liberty and individual sovereignty. So with that, we do want to get into the cod fishery bounties, but I also wanted to talk about, you know, how Columbus Day has become such an insult to the progressives that I think you need to start considering Columbus Week. Kind of like we have Constitution Week. I honestly think that it would just pour salt on their wounds for the right reasons. Because if you start understanding that what ended up happening, people are no longer living in obscurity. People are no longer living in conditions and so forth. Let me ask you this. Think about this. How many indigenous tribes that lived in America, and this is a commonality amongst almost all of them. How many of them had a written language? How many of them had any written history? I mean, almost everything was taken, you know, by word of mouth or what have you, because they didn't have, not that they didn't have it, they had lost their ability to write and converse and communicate. Because if you look at the ancient Mayans and even the Aztec ruins, there were records and writings and language, but that was all lost. We'll be right back after this.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
I hate it when I do that. I get caught up in trying to get some things out because, anyway, as you know, we bleed into the promos. It's not my intent to do that. But anyway, so I hate it when I do that. But if you understand the concept of what ended up happening because Christopher Columbus opened up the New World, it allowed the New World to actually become a part of Western Enlightenment. Well, boy, is that not big-headed.
Why would these people even want to have any enlightenment whatsoever? Apparently, being a part of a society that just, you know, languished in, what do you want to call it? I don't want to use the terms savage and that type of stuff, because that's inaccurate. It's not like these individual tribes were, and disparate tribes, disparate, not desperate, but these individual tribes were not unified. As a matter of fact, there were reasons why the North American tribes were kind of independent and autonomous as much as they were. Look at what the heck was going on in the let's just call it the large populace, because you got to understand, down in Central America, that's like tropical weather. They don't have winters down there. They don't have harsh conditions. One would it'd have to be pretty bad to leave tropical paradise to go live and survive in a more austere environment and conditions, right? Well, it was pretty bad. I mean, the king of the Aztecs, it was pretty well documented, he was brutal. He was a savage. He was decapitating people, you know, for the human sacrifice or what have you, because of the lack of enlightenment. Now, here's the interesting thing. When Europe started to expand, there were different migrations of different nations coming into the New World. Portugal and Spain brought brutality with them. And as a matter of fact, if you understand the lack of indigenous tribes within Mexico, even though there were probably more indigenous people down in the Central America and Mexico than there were in the Americas. What happened? Well, it was because they had a policy of impregnating all the women and they created a whole new race called Mexicans, right? Because the Spaniards were impregnating them. Well, you know, some of the backlashes with some of that was that some diseases were exchanged between the cultures, and some of those diseases ravaged Europe as they came back. And Allen and Schweikert, if you've never read A Patriot's View of American History, I think that's the name of the book. I'm just reciting off the top of my head. Those two historians actually refute almost all of the things that the left has been propagating in trying to create a greater blanket of white guilt. If you want to understand the true unvarnished history of what kind of happened and the outfalls and so forth, that book, A Patriot's History of the United States, is a far better look than what you're ever going to get out of school and out of the textbooks that they are preaching from. But the whole intent of Columbus Week, instead of Columbus Day, is to recognize that right, wrong, or indifferent, let's just say conquests were natural. As a matter of fact, the tribes of the Americas were conquestors as well. When they ran out of food, when the American Indians ran millions of buffaloes off of the cliff and they, you know, grabbed what they could take and they left the carcasses to rot, because they were good conservatives in doing that, right? I mean, that's what we've been told. But the fact of the matter is, when all of a sudden they didn't have anything to hunt, they would have to migrate and they would probably encroach upon somebody else. And then next thing you know, that would become a conquest. There were all sorts of wars. The tribes of the Americas were not united and they were not working together. They were still held in their steeped biases. And I'll just use ignorance, because they weren't illiterate and or an educated and enlightened society. Even though the words civilization is constantly used, it's not that they weren't good people. It's just that for some reason, they never got, and they actually regressed from what was perceived to be the Mayans and that advanced society to what it became, Stone Age type of society once again. So I know that there's people that look at their heritage and so forth as the, you know, the, these are all bad things. I understand that there are consequences to the expanse of people and so forth. But at that point in time, right, wrong, or indifferent, Western society had this thing called the laws of nations. And within the laws of nations were the laws governing conquests. In other words, they absolutely allowed it, just like every other society has justified and allowed it. It was being practiced in the Americas as well as Europe. And as I have told people, had the United Tribes of Americas actually had the ability to project themselves and project force, they would have ravaged Europe just like Attila the Hun 1,000 years before. And so let's look at Columbus Week and understand that there was a huge difference in the migrations of the northern European countries, Holland, France, and America, in the northern hemisphere compared to Central and South America. That the conquestors, or those people, the Brits and so forth, when they came to America, it's not like they were practicing those heathenistic practices of impregnating the women and, you know, trying to eradicate a race. It wasn't like, I mean, there was an attempt to try to create harmony. Now, some people say, well, you know, the white people came here to lie and to, you know, take advantage, to kill. I don't believe that anybody that was migrating to the Americas actually had the intent to go lie and stick it to somebody. I don't buy into that. It's almost like saying, well, I think the people that were living in the Americas that were languishing for these centuries, thousands of years, that were just unadvanced, I think that they were just waiting to be taken advantage of, right? I mean, that's about as ludicrous as thinking that everybody that was coming here to take advantage of them. There's no doubt that there were all sorts of terrible things that occurred. The Trail of Tears was a violation of the Constitution, and if anybody says, hey, we need to dig up Andrew Jackson and burn him in effigy, I'd go, okay, if that's what's going to help you come to closure, okay, maybe. But I don't think rational people do those things. I think rational people learn to move on and figure out how to unite and work together on common causes. And I believe the common cause is individual liberty and individual sovereignty. It's not about protecting cultures. It's not about, because cultures tend to be wrong. But when the culture becomes about individual liberty and individual sovereignty, then you have the ability. And that's why America is a melting pot. That's why people get it when they come here. They have the inalienable rights to succeed and or fail, to try to do whatever they think they can to, and I don't want to say just to get ahead, but to make their lot better for themselves as well as for their children. And so I think that we could look at Thanksgiving. We could make Columbus Day going into Thanksgiving, you know, as a I think the Jews and I think Islam and I think there's other cultures that celebrate a month-long thing. And I'm absolutely okay with, you know, starting off with Columbus Day and using that time from Columbus Day to Thanksgiving as a time of recognizing what had really transpired and what has happened. Because this American experiment was a benefactor of Christopher Columbus. This American experiment created benefits for the entire world, because I'm telling you, the entire world is almost freed of slavery because of the American experiment. You have to understand that, yeah, we had been inflicted with slavery from the European cultures, and the concepts that were coming out of America was the catalyst that brought what do you want to call this? we brought forth the efforts and exerted the efforts and money required in shutting down the slave trades in the world and almost eradicating slavery. The only other time that there has ever been an effort in that capacity to have any kind of success was in the Bible with Moses and Israel. And so here you have God doing it in Israel, and then the divine hand of providence by planting the ideas and concepts of individual liberty and sovereignty in America. These things need to be lauded. These things do not need to languish so that we all of a sudden forget the truths and the principles that built this great nation. Now, when we come back, I've been promising you the cod fishery bounties. We're going to get into the cod fishery bounties when we come back, but I'm going to give you more of the back brief on these. And so if we get started today, that'll be great. But what we want to do is give you the back info on the cod fishery bounties. So we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
You know, as I was starting off the show and commenting that the land of liberty, I do not believe the divine hand of providence wanted to limit the land of liberty by these arbitrary boundaries and borders that we now live within, that we call the United States. I believe that the intent was to ensure or to offer to all people to be able to come drink at the well. And so the reason I'm going back on this tangent is in the news itself, if you haven't heard, there have been some that are standing up in supporting the suppression of liberty in China. LeBron James being one of them. And in the last promo talking about social justice, you have to understand, go back to the Billy Graham and that letter of commitment that young man sent to his fiancée, telling her that communism was now his mistress, his wife, his life, that he would gladly give so that communism could succeed in subjugating everybody for their own good and for the betterment of the world. Friends, this is not just an arbitrary Democrat and Republican Party thing. You know, go team. These are very serious ideologies. We cannot take these things lightly, and we have to understand that those people who are social justice warriors, whenever they use those terms, that is code for communism. Go look at the Google definition. It is about the distribution of not just wealth, but in the social spectrum of justice and so forth, so that they redistribute equally. And it's almost like what ended up happening, was it Poland or I think it was Hungary. In Hungary, when Hungary fell to communism in the 50s, the government took away the land from the farmers and gave it to the peasants. They divided it up so that everybody had their own lot. Well, what did they just do? They took away the land from those people who, the land that had been in the hands of people working the lands for centuries, understanding what the heck it is to, you know, when to plant the crops and how to treat the crops and how to take care of the husbandry, that practice of husbandry. And they gave it to people that had no clue. And what ended up happening was that these farmers were barely able to feed themselves, these newly found farmers. And what ended up happening was Hungary had a huge shortage of food because they all of a sudden couldn't produce food for themselves. And that was just a common problem. And that's a common problem that happens with communism. You start giving to people that have, one, no appreciation and no understanding of what they need to do to be successful. Here, just go do this. Yeah, it's that easy, right? People think that, oh, well, anybody can farm. I'm telling you that there are all sorts of little things that you have to be wary and look for, pests and those types of things. Anyway, long story short, if you understand what ends up happening with social justice and the redistribution of both land, wealth, and everything else, it doesn't benefit society in doing that. And as a matter of fact, I would highly recommend that everybody needs to read Adam Smith's A Wealth of Nations, because understanding investments and understanding taking on responsibility to start an entrepreneurial endeavor and to what it takes to become successful and so forth. Those types of principles is what built the world. Taking and giving away and entitlements is what destroys the world. And I want to be very clear. Anybody that is standing up for social justice, anybody that is standing up on these principles that, you know, we've got to give equity and that these people were unfairly treated with this, you know, carte blanche or this broad brush of assertions, all they're doing is they are promoting a narrative of communism. And that, boy, if they had the chance, they would be able to just make life so much better for everybody. Just trust them. You know, social justice is a scale of the redistribution of wealth that even Engels and Marx did not really fathom completely in the Manifesto of Communism. Some of the things that were in there would be, you know, just alarming and would actually, you know, get you probably very motivated. If you've never read it, read the last part of it, because this is where Marx and Engels actually inserted this, where the family is to be, you know, let's just say the concept of traditional families are to be obliterated, that the state becomes the parents of all people. that they dictate who gets to marry who. They will dictate, you know, how they can have the best athletes, how they can have the strongest type of race possible. I mean, this goes into the likes of, well, it goes all the way back to Plato, but this goes down the same path of what Hitler tried to do in trying to genetically create a super society and or a super race. Folks, we've got to start recognizing what the heck it is we're dealing with. And this is pure evil. And LeBron James wants to inject himself as a pointy end of the spear in trying to permeate global communism and or selling it. And, you know, as long as kids can buy his shoes, they have no idea what the heck they're supporting. Anyway, if you understand the entitlement state and the evilness of the entitlement state, the framers clearly understood. And the whole role of the cod fishery bounties in my reading this was to help you understand the impact that Madison was trying to make. So what I want to do is I want to set up the conversation that actually occurred by Mr. Livermore and then Mr. Lawrence. And Mr. Livermore says this: the bill now under consideration has two important objects in view. The one is to give encouragement to our fishermen and by that encouragement to increase their numbers. The other is to govern those fishermen by certain laws by which they will be kept under due restraint. Both these objects are of great importance to such persons as choose to employ their capitals in fishery business. And I believe it will not be disputed that the business itself is of considerable importance to the United States, insomuch as it affords a certain proportion of remittance of exportation to foreign countries and does not impoverish the country but enriches it by the addition of such much wealth drawn from the sea. In other words, they're talking about taking money that they were that the nation was making on its imports of goods from other nations and giving a little bit of that so that they could actually build up the cod fishery business. There was a reason why they wanted to build this up and encourage people to become a part of this. Now, first off, the cod fisheries was where? It wasn't down in the Carolinas. It was up in the colder waters of New England. And so this was a unique side of the market space. In other words, if you understand the uniformity clause, the Constitution restrains the federal government from treating one part of the United States differently than another part. And so it doesn't have the ability to inject and saying, we want to support this at, you know, and build these businesses up and help the lifestyle and the living standards of the people up there. But the people down here were, you know, in slavery and those types of things, we're just going to let them squander. So anyway, it is the object of those gentlemen who favor the bill that the fishermen should have some encouragement not given to them at the expense of the United States, but directed to them out of what was in the former law called a drawback of the duty on salt. The calculation, as I understand it, has been made as nearly as possible to give that drawback not to the merchants who export the fish, but to the fishermen who take it in order to increase that description of men without whose assistance is in vain to expect any benefit from the fisheries, in other words, employing people. For if the merchants at present engage in that branch possess the whole capital of the United States, yet if they cannot get fishermen, they cannot carry on the fishery. This is done by the particular class of men. So they're getting into the details of justifying exactly every bit, every, you know, part of why they want to build the cod fishery market and industry in the northeastern part of the United States. And so he goes on and says, whilst the drawback is payable, and he's selling, and I see we're going to be hitting a hard break. What's going to happen when we come back is I'm going to kind of skim. I'm not even going to cover the rest of this. And I'm going to cover what ends up happening when Mr. Lawrence pipes in, because this is where he actually starts talking about the Constitution, particularly. And then, as he kind of paints, you know, the constitutionality, Madison pipes in. And so we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
So, after Mr. Who was that? Was that Livermore, I think it was? Because I want to jump forward to Mr. Lawrence. Yes, it was Mr. Livermore. So, Mr. Lawrence jumps in examining the section. And he conceives, basically, and actually states, is contemplated no more than what the merchant is entitled to by existing laws. Now, got to understand that the existing laws were coming from the Articles of Confederation. The merchant is now entitled to the drawback, but it is found by experience that the effect has not been to produce that encouragement to the fishermen which was expected. And he presumed the way was perfectly clear to give a new direction to the drawback, and this is all that is aimed at in the bill. He supposed that the clause had no necessary connection with the question which has been started respecting the right of government to grant bounties. But since the question has been brought forward, it may be proper to consider it. In discussing the question, he inquired, what has Congress already done? Have we not laid extra duties on various articles expressly for the purpose of encouraging various branches of our own manufacturers? These duties are bounties to all intent and purposes and are founded on the idea of their conducing to the general interest. Similar objections to those now advanced were not made to these duties. They were advocated, some of them, by gentlemen from the southward. He traced the effects of these duties and showed that they operated fully as indirect bounties. So what they're doing is they're playing with the commerce and trying to bolster up different economic sectors of the United States. And in this very particular case, they were trying to bolster up the fisheries. Now, this is all built upon this concept of manipulating the economy to actually benefit, you know, a specific part of the commerce in one particular part of the United States. So Mr. Lawrence then adverted particularly to the Constitution and observed that it contains general principles and powers only. These powers depend on particular laws for their operation. And on this idea, he contended that the powers of the government must, in various circumstances, extend to the granting bounties. He instanced the case of war with a foreign power. Will any gentleman say that the general government has not a power to grant a bounty on arms, ammunition, and etc.? Should the general welfare require it? The general welfare is inseparably connected with any object or pursuit which in its effects adds to the riches of the country. He conceived that the argument was given up by a gentleman in opposition to the bill when they admitted of encouragement to the fishermen in any possible modification of it. He then adverted particularly to the fishery, stated the number of men employed, the tons of shipping necessary to export the fish taken, and inferred the sound policy of encouraging so important a branch of business. Gentlemen say that we do not want a navy. Grant it. These are their words. They're saying that they don't want a navy, but it's in the Constitution, by the way. Gentlemen say that we do not want a navy, granted, but can they say that we shall never have a war with any European power? May not the time arrive when the protection to the commerce of this country derived from this may be of the utmost necessity to its extents? Adverting to Mr. Williamson's objection from the unequal operation of bounties that he's talking about the uniformity clause of Mr. Williamson, and who referred to the articles of the Constitution, which says that the taxes shall be equal in all the states. Absolutely, not just the taxes, but the implementation and the utilization of those taxes shall be equal in all the states. Mr. Lawrence observed that this article in the Constitution could only respect the rates of duties and that the same duties should be paid in Virginia that are paid in New York at the northward as the part of the southward. It surely could not mean that every individual should pay the exact sum in every part of the Union. Thus was a provision that no law could possibly contemplate. He concluded by summary, recapitulating of his argument and saying he hoped the section would be retained in trying to create this bounty. Now, so what is really happening here, and I'll just give you the overview. On the 3rd of February, 1792, the Committee of the Whole, this is the entire body of the House of Representatives, began considering this bill for the encouragement of cod fishery bounties. As passed by the Senate, the first section of the bill replaced the existing drawback of the import of duty on salt to exporters of salted fish with a new one based on tonnage to owners of fishing vessels. So they were really going back and forth as to where they wanted to start, you know, playing or putting the money, whether it was going to the ship owners or whether it was actually going to the exporters of the salted fish. These are two separate entities. If you understand, you know, shipping is handled by one company and, you know, the exporters, the people that are doing the deals on the ends are different. They're the middlemen in the deals, right? Exporters and importers. I'm not going to get into what Madison says, but the whole point here is that these guys are actually debating these principles and what Madison, you know, and the application, I should say, of the principles of paying bounties by utilizing the money coming in into the treasury via the imports of all goods coming into the United States. And they're saying, we need to get a little extra money just for, you know, and they actually go through this, and I think it's in the very, after Madison talks, they go through all the different types of commerce that is being imported, from indigo to, you know, different agricultural products, tobacco, and all sorts of things that are being imported, and some of the things that are being exported. And what really is astounding is how these men are talking in very specific terms, and when Madison steps up, and when Madison actually makes his argument against using the public purse for these intents of the General Defense and Welfare Clause, that the intent of the Constitution was not at all to use the public treasury to doing any of these things. Because, as he says, and we'll get into this tomorrow or in our next episode, that the intent, even though it may be noble, the intent, even though there may be good intent, it actually becomes a very insidious process because it becomes abused. What happens, and he uses shock value, and this is just to show you that they use shock value back then as they do today. Just like, you know, when they were going through the Kavanaugh hearings and they were trying to, oh, you know, it's tantamount to Kavanaugh was the one that raped all women. It's a shock value. And so Madison actually points out that when you start using the General Welfare Clause well beyond the preamble and the overall intent is that the United States, one, it has to be uniform in its applications of everything, but it is not supposed to be the payer or the sugar daddy for, you know, any business or any type of efforts of what I'll use the term welfare or entitlement, because what is welfare? What is entitlement? Is it education? Well, yeah, that's kind of a welfare because it is supposedly making kids productive in society, right? Right? So that, you know, we have kids go to school and then they become contributors to society. Well, that's for the betterment and the welfare of the nation. Madison gets into what ends the dangers of what ends up happening when you use those types of arguments in injecting money from the public purse to utilize for education, because he says the next thing is we take over religion, we take over education, we take over every facet. And in that whole essence, Congress becomes the wielder of all power, and it is to their discretion, no longer to the court or anything else. He says, you guys are opening up a can of worms that will decimate the whole intent of this Constitution and the Republic itself. And so he stays in the theoretical, ideological space of the intent behind the Constitution, where these guys are actually talking about, well, we want to open these doors to do these things. Because Madison points out, when you start opening these doors, there are other doors you will start walking through. And when you do that, the next thing we know is the government is going to take over religion, it's going to take over education, and all of these things. And everybody was aghast. But how profound was it that Madison actually called those things? Because that's where they are today. Anyway, we will be back. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty.